the most important meal of the day, second breakfast. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another Second Breakfast podcast. I'm Andy Roth alongside Phil DeVault. Say hi, Phil.
I'm going to sound like this today, Andy, and everybody else. So, hi, everybody.
Can I call you Jimmy Durante or something?
Yeah, I've concocted a mixture of milk, fat, and bourbon to coat my throat, so hopefully it'll get through all right.
Inka-dinka-doo.
I'm pretty sure the first time you ever heard Inka-dinka-doo was in my dorm room.
It was because of you. That's absolutely true. I had just seen clips, but my first experience with that song was
just so you all know what kind of guy I was in college. I was the kind of guy that when people came over to my dorm room, I was like, "You need to hear Jimmy Durante sing Inka Dinka Doo."
You
how was I not more loved?
You took too many words to say the word insufferable there.
I would defend myself, but I am defenseless.
Right. No, you'd be right. I suffered.
So I would, I would have liked to have been someone completely different in college. Okay. I think if I'm being honest, I think what I would have done is pretty much everything different than what I did. But that's okay, because here we are. Because I am who I am because of what I was, some people say. So
that's right. That's right. We are the sum total of our experiences. At the end of this week, it is Friday, we are the sum total of our experiences this week.
It's true.
And as you can tell from both of our voices, it's been a long week.
I'm going to just do for the rest of the podcast, I'm just going to sing Tom Waits songs. That's going to be the whole... Wasted and Wounded. It's going to be awesome.
Fantastic. I love it.
Okay.
I love it. So what we do here as Second Breakfast, as you well know, we do a viewer mailbag. These are questions brought to us by our actual viewers, and we answer them because we like to feel important. And so if you would like to get in on some sweet viewer mailbag action, please email us your question to secondbreakfastpodcast@gmail.com. And
that'll do it.
Yeah, that'll do it. And away we go.
We love mailbag questions. We love them.
We love them.
What's funny is when Andy's like, if you want to get on the mailbag, let me say it differently. If you want to get into our good graces.
Totes. Yeah, that's
which
totally true.
You may not realize the benefits of that, but the people who are in our good graces, they know the benefits.
They know the benefits. They do.
So that's all I'm saying.
You say true. First question from good friend of the podcast, Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
He asks a question about Marvel.
Ah.
And not the question that I know you, Phil, expected because you've read it, but Second Breakfast Nation, not the one you might be expecting. Does Blade get the credit it deserves in the Marvel pantheon?
Hmm.
To follow up, both in terms of status among fellow superheroes and in terms of ushering in the comic book superhero revolution in cinema.
Ah.
Yes.
Do you want to go first or do you want me to?
I'll go first. Okay. To answer the first one, in terms of status among fellow superheroes, I mean, for me, the answer is clearly yes, because, I mean, he's fine, but he's not one of the heavy hitters. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I look forward to your answer to that question, but that's pretty cut and dried to me. He's awesome, you know, but I had literally never heard of the comic book before I saw the movie. So what does that tell you, you know?
Sure.
And I cannot think of another comic book movie that has come out where I hadn't heard of the character before I saw the movie. Whether or not I'd read any of it, I had always heard of the character.
Well, that's about to change. That's about to change because now we're going to be having Ant-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy.
I had never heard of Guardians of the Galaxy. I had heard of Ant-Man. I'd heard of Doctor Strange.
I had not heard of them.
Okay.
So.
You should watch that cartoon I told you about, Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes. You'll love the crap out of it, I promise you.
Okay.
to answer the second question, in terms of ushering in the comic book superhero revolution in cinema, there's no doubt it came at the forefront. Certainly the first two movies came to the forefront. or sort of as the wave was going up. But at the same time, you had the super the Spider-Man movies, you had the X-Men movies, and I think they all, and to be fair, you also had the Fantastic Four movies.
No, you don't.
That's what, you're right. And those are all, those are all Marvel, right? What I think Blade might have done, and I am, this is pure conjecture on my part, what I think Blade might have done was show that a tertiary character, as long as the movies were fun, right? Not even necessarily good, although I think the first two movies are good. I think the second one is the best. The third one, Blade Trinity, is just a total mess, but whatever. As long as the movies are fun, they will find an audience. And I think that has been borne out in two ways. One, I don't know if Blade wasn't part of the early success. I won't say purely because of Blade. If Blade wasn't part of the early success, I wonder if Marvel would have formed Marvel Studios and sort of taken all these rights back and started doing them themselves. And even if they had, I don't know if they would have thought about it in terms of, oh, well, we have secondary characters that can work. Let's try making an Avengers movie. And the other thing that I have just forgotten, I just went completely out of my head. I'm just going to interrupt you when you start speaking.
Okay. If I remember. That's fine, because I can only talk for short bursts, and then I have to recover my voice again.
Fantastic.
Here's the thing. I think the answer is that it gets the credit it deserves. And I really, really liked Blade 1 and 2. But here's the deal. I think there's two things we have to think about. One is, in terms of the way it's treated in the Marvel Universe, it may be a Marvel comic. But it's hard to think of Blade within the Marvel Universe. And I don't know how they've handled Blade in the comic books. So I may be talking right out of my butt here, and I may just be way off. But in my mind, Blade is dealing with a very specific issue. He is a half vampire in a world where vampires exist, and he has to kill vampires.
Yep.
I don't see him fitting into the Avengers, for instance.
Yeah, that's true.
Not because he's not a total badass, just because he has a very specific purpose and a very specific, and the reality in which there are vampires is a very specific reality. I cannot imagine the Avengers being like, here's Loki from another planet, and by the way, there's vampires. If you haven't seen this, go online and look for Patton Oswalt's, the outtake of Patton Oswalt on Parks and Recreation, basically for no reason pitching the new Star Wars movie, which is like a Star Wars Avengers mashup.
Yes.
That's sort of what, and it's ridiculous. It's hilarious because it's ridiculous. And yeah. That's kind of what it would be like to just be like, oh, here's Greek gods and this guy from this other planet and this thing. And oh, by the way, vampires.
Yeah.
Someone would just be like, stop. What is this garbage? We might as well put Brad Pitt in it and call it World War Z because it's a stupid idea. So I think it doesn't fit inside the Marvel Universe. And so for that reason, its success wouldn't necessarily mean much in terms of the success of other ones. The other thing I would say about it is, it was successful, but it was modestly... Well, no, I mean, the first movie made $82 million or something like that,
okay,
which is great. It weighed way more than they thought it would.
Yeah.
But that movie came out... Blade 1 came out in 2000 or in 98, and it made $70 million. Blade 2 came out in 2002 and made $82 million, mm-hmm. Okay? Spider-Man also came out in 2002 and made $400 million domestic. $800 million worldwide.
Yeah.
Which of these movies is more obviously responsible for Marvel going, wait a minute?
My only response to that is that Spider-Man is low-hanging fruit. I mean, money is money, right?
Money's money. I hear you, but we're talking about why... what kind of credit Blade gets for instigating the movement. And I'm saying I don't think it instigated the movement.
I agree with that. I do think, and I won't even say there is. I will say there might be something to what I was saying earlier, and I realize I don't have two points. I conflated the two.
Sure.
there is something to the point that, like, if Spider-Man is successful, okay. I mean, Batman has been successful before. Superman has been successful before. If I think about superheroes, those are, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, those are literally the first three superheroes I think.
Sure, sure.
You know?
No, I hear you. I hear you.
And so the something that has to sort of be proven, part of the proof of concept of a genre is when lesser known entities, when lesser, like when romantic comedies without people that anybody knows.
And if that's the case, but I think so Spider-Man made so much ridiculous amounts of money. I mean, you're right. Batman, Spider-Man, Superman, no question.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, even that being said, Spider-Man made so much ridiculous amounts of money that I think Marvel said, let's give Iron Man a shot. And yes. They had a good concept for it. Yes. And really, Iron Man gets all the credit. It really should.
I agree with you.
But to me, Blade, there's two issues with... I mean, so there's the issue of vampires with Blade. I think the... and the other issue is, quite honestly... Blade was a black movie for black people. Hear me out. I loved Blade a lot. It filled a specific niche, though. It was seen as niche marketing by a lot of people. It did pretty well, but it was like seen as breaking out of the black market, literally the African-American market. It was seen that way.
Yeah.
I went and saw Blade 2 in the theaters with a buddy of mine in Boston, and we were the only white people in the theater, which, by the way, was an amazing experience. It was it's a whole other story. That was fantastic. And growing up in Orange County, where we have three black people, that was pretty amazing. I think to some degree, Blade would never get taken seriously unless it made $400 million, and then it would be taken seriously because people said, can you believe the crossover potential or the crossover success that this movie that was targeted towards black people had, which is a hilarious idea since he's the only black person in the movie.
But
he's the hero, and that even more, he's the black hero among a bunch of white vampires.
The female lead is, she's not much of a lead. She's the scientist that produces the serum in the first
episode. Sure. You're right. Black. But that's an even interesting idea because then you basically have the whole mythos of a black hero among a bunch of white vampires, which is, that's just great. That's great stuff. Culturally, we could talk about that for years, but we're not gonna.
It's like the next Shaft movie. Shaft in Africa.
Right.
Shaft
is a half vampire, yeah.
Right.
And so I think the fact that it was targeted, or that it was seen as being targeted towards black audiences and was successful beyond that, or within that, is sort of where it gets left, whether it should or not. But I don't think that Blade, by and large, was a ginormous hit.
Sure.
I would put Blade in here. So here's my final statement. If I was going to fit Blade in a category of comic book movies, I would put it in the category with The Crow.
Nice.
Because The Crow was another movie that was a minor comic book character. In 1994, it made almost 51 million, 50 and a half million, which is a good amount of change, and spawned some sequels and had, of course, its terrible backstory for this filming. But it was a fairly successful movie within a genre, within a realm.
Yeah.
So The Crow made 50 in 94. 4 or 5 years later, Blade makes 72 mil.
Mm-hmm.
These were movies that were, oh, wow, that movie did way better than we expected. Let's make more of them.
Yeah.
But it took Iron Man for them to go, okay, this just got real. You know,
I agree with everything you said. Can I tell you what I think for me personally is the single best thing to come out of the Blade movies?
Oh, yeah, of course.
The crossover and mainstream career of Guillermo del Toro. He directed Blade 2. He directed Blade 2, which is
terrifying.
Which is terrifying and exciting. Like, the action is exciting. The mood is terrifying. There's scary moments.
Well said, Andy.
And that was in 2002. 2 years later, Hellboy comes out. Two years after that, Pan's Labyrinth comes out, which is still maybe the best movie I've seen in the last decade. It's top five, certainly. And Hellboy 2, which I much like, even though he was responsible for both of them, I think Hellboy, and he wasn't for the first two Blade movies, I think Hellboy 2 is even better than Hellboy 1. Del Toro is instantly, he's making a movie, I'm going to see it on opening day.
Sure.
Period. And that started, it didn't start with Blade 2, but I was excited for Hellboy. Another comic book character that I guess I didn't know about before I saw the movie or did research when I heard the movie was coming out.
Right.
But the reason I was excited for Hellboy was because, hey, that director who directed Blade 2 is directing this. You know?
Yeah.
So that's so iffy as far as the comic book genre, Tom. But in terms of my personal movie tastes, I think the series has been very influential on movies that I have loved over the past decade or so.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Good?
I think we're good. Yeah. I liked Blade.
Me too.
I thought the biggest thing that Blade contributed to pop culture was when he killed one guy and then said, "Some mother effers are always trying to ice skate uphill."
It's true. That is.
And amazing. I don't remember if that was the first one or the second one, but it was the greatest line ever to finish off a bad guy. "Some mother effers always trying to ice skate uphill."
Yeah. Here's another thing I think about. Yeah. Here's that brings up the last thing I'll say about the Blade movies. Hard R, both for action, for action, for violence, for language. And you know
what? I think that might be another reason why we can't really attribute them to this sort of, and that fits in with The Crow.
That's fair.
The Crow was like that as well.
Yep.
I mean, The Crow had all the F words and had him squeezing the heroin out of the girl's arm after she'd taken it.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes.
Anyways. No, anyways, I'm with you. All right.
So, moving on. Our second question today comes from our director, Keith. Thanks, Keith. What's
nice, Keith. Way to back us up, buddy.
Yeah. Two paragraphs and a question. The paragraphs in question are written by Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. Or not written by, but there are quotes in both of them. Steven Spielberg on Wednesday predicted an implosion in the film industry is inevitable, whereby a half dozen or so $250 million movies flop at the box office and alter the industry forever. What comes next, or even before then, will be price variances at movie theaters, where you're going to have to pay $25 for the next Iron Man, you're probably only going to have to pay $7 to see Lincoln. He also said that Lincoln came this close to being an HBO movie instead of a theatrical release, which ties in nicely to that sort of business model, if you will. Second paragraph. George Lucas agreed that massive changes are afoot, including film exhibition morphing somewhat into a Broadway play model, which is also similar to the price variance, whereby fewer movies are released. This is different. They stay in theaters for a year, and ticket prices are much higher. His prediction prompted Spielberg to recall that his 1982 film E.T. the Extraterrestrial stayed in theaters for a year and 4 months.
Mm.
I can go first again if you want.
What's the question?
Oh, here we go. Here's Keith's question. Are they wrong? Is a film industry implosion coming?
Can I go first?
Please do.
Because my answer is so dumb.
Go for it.
Here's my answer. Nah. because I'm so status quo. And I'm so, like, it's in my bones. Like, anything I believe that's not status quo, I feel apologetic about.
Sure.
Like, I'm so, I believe things that aren't status quo, but I don't talk about, like, I would never talk about them on this show because I don't want people to think I'm a crazy person. And I have a lot of them. I have, like, there's more and more of them growing. Like, it's weird. The older I get, the more I'm like, yeah, I don't think we should have an army. And people are like, what? Nothing. I didn't. In fact, just then that was a joke, people. I was just kidding. I swear. So, what I'd rather just do is just be like, nah, things are like this now. It's homeostasis. I prefer homeostasis.
Sure.
I never have it. Please don't take away things the way I understand them. That's all. But I will say this.
Please do.
David Spade made a great joke. I'm the first person ever to make that say that sentence. David Spade made a great joke once where he's talking about people being like, and I've said this before on the show, but I'll say it again. People being like,
right,
oh God, Titanic cost $200 million to make. And he's like, what do I care? I still only have to pay $10 to see it.
Yeah.
Like, And then they're like, or the, you know, the converse of that, or the inverse, whichever of that, whichever sounds smarter, is like that movie was really, you know, slow and the lighting wasn't great. Yeah, but it only cost, you know, $100,000 to make. And he's like, again, yeah, but I should have only had to pay a quarter. Like, yeah. If you're going to do that to me, if you're going to be like, oh, well, you should go in with low expectations, fine, I will, just make me pay less. You know, but the idea being, I'm going to pay $10 no matter what. Now it's like 12, 15, 20. So you may as well, you should spend $1 billion on the movie. I don't care. Now, if all of a sudden we start to see movies based on how much they cost to see, I'm interested in that world, actually. It's scary. It's scary. But I'm interested in that world. I'm interested in a world where Lincoln costs less than the Avengers.
Okay.
And seeing what really matters to me. I'm interested. I'm interested in a world where Mud only cost me $2 and it was the best movie I saw.
Fair. That's fair.
Anyway, so
that's fair. I guess my reticence is, you know, Joss Whedon, Marvel Studios, and whoever released it with Marvel Studios, distributed it with Marvel. I don't think it was Disney by then. It might have been. I don't know. They got like $60-$70 off of me, right? Like, because I saw that movie 6 times in the theater.
Right.
You know?
Well, wait a minute. Yeah, they got more than that because you probably saw it IMAX 3D at least twice.
Oh, that's true. So let's say
they probably got like $70-$80 off you.
So to make the math easy, let's say $75, and let's say that in the future the Avengers will cost $25, right?
Yeah.
If it costs $25, it's like the way if you've got a $100 bill in your pocket, that bill stays in there forever. But if you break it into 520s, it's gone like water.
Yeah.
Right? If it cost $25 to see the movie, I would not have seen it 3 times in the theater. I just wouldn't have,
yeah.
You know? And I know that I'm an unusual, my movie going habits are unusual, but the fact is that with movies like The Avengers, I'm not that unusual. People went to see The Dark Knight a zillion times. People went to see Titanic a zillion times. I think the example of E.T. the Extraterrestrial is a bit specious, because that's one of the highest grossing movies of all time. Like,
sure.
it's not like Mud stayed in the theaters for a year and 4 months, right?
Right.
Even though I think it should. something implies.
No, but even here. But wait a minute. But yeah. You do recognize a year and 4 months for E.T. and it being one of the highest grossing films. Yes, but the highest grossing films that have been in theaters these days were in the theaters for tops for, I wonder how many months Avatar was in the theaters. I bet you it was in the theaters 4 months.
That's true, but something they're doing that I actually fully support, and this might have, it certainly didn't start because it never really stopped, but the first movie of sort of this generation that I can think of them doing it is Braveheart. They brought it back. Like, I have no problem, you know what I wish would come back really, honestly, in full force? Second run movie theaters.
Well, yeah, well,
that would be great.
The other thing is, well, that would be great. Part of the thing that would need to happen, though, is, you know, we don't have, it costs a lot of money to run movie theaters. And
right. That's true.
There's so many of them. They've saturated the market. That's the other huge thing, is you think about it, like, E.T. probably opened on, 1,000 screens worldwide?
Probably.
And yeah. Avatar was on 5,000?
Yeah. Yeah. 3,000 just in the U.S. Yeah.
So that's a very different thing, you know?
Yeah. You're right. But let me drill down into what these guys say. I think it is inevitable that half dozen or so $250 million movies will flop. I just think that's inevitable over a long enough time frame. And we already had, I don't know if it was $250 million, but for the purpose of this conversation, it will work. Green Lantern was a flop, you know.
After Earth was a flop. I don't know how much it cost.
After Earth also a flop. I wonder, though, if that will alter the industry, because there is nothing appreciably different between those two movies and the Transformers movies. As a matter of fact, I think both of those movies are better than anything in any of the three Transformers movies, with the exception of a couple moments that I thought were actually really cool in the third movie.
Right.
But the Transformer, all of the Transformers movies made significantly more money than either of those movies. So what's your lesson, right? If you're a Hollywood executive, oh, I can't greenlight this because it's too dumb. Clearly, that's not your thought process.
Right.
Oh, I can't greenlight it because it's going to, like, cost too much money. Clearly, that's not part of your thought process in a vacuum, right?
Right.
You're not going to give Jeff Nichols, who directed Mud, $250 million for his next movie, although I think you should, Hollywood.
Right.
But you know what I mean? I believe that those flops will occur. We might be seeing another one with World War Z. I think we will, as a matter of fact. But I don't know that that will set a precedent in any way. I am interested because I'm interested in sort of the state and sort of the movement of the industry. That Spielberg was close to putting Lincoln on HBO, simply because I haven't seen it, but I heard Behind the Candelabra was great. As we've talked, TV in general is the quality is indistinguishable or better than movies these days. And specifically HBO, they are doing things that there really is no difference between what you would see on HBO and what you'd see in a movie theater.
Yeah. But for the record, I straight up, and maybe it's because he's a baby boomer and I don't trust him, mm-hmm. I don't believe Steven Spielberg for a second that Lincoln was going to end up on HBO. For a second.
Sure.
Spielberg was not going to make a movie with Daniel Day-Lewis, Sally Field, Tommy Lee Jones, and every other person who ever existed and put it on HBO.
Fair.
He wasn't going to do that. And I think he's full of it. And by the way, him and George Lucas, they're both liars.
That's true.
I happen to like one of them more than the other, but they're both liars. I'll tell you something else. This whole idea of like, oh, I'll tell you what's going to happen. Everything's going to be totally different. George Lucas was the one who was saying 10 years ago, everyone's going to be having digital cameras and making movies and no one's going to be going to the movie theater anymore.
Right.
Okay, that clearly hasn't happened.
It's true. You're right. Specifically about George Lucas's thing, like the Broadway play model, I would love it if movies that deserved it would be in the theater for longer. I really do. Because while there might not be second-run movie theaters, there are independent movie theaters. And I don't live in a large, like, a hugely populated part of the country. The entire triangle together, I think, is probably less than a million people. But But there's not one art house or independent theater. There's, like, 15, right?
Right.
So
you live in an area with a lot of college towns.
It's true. But
which is great.
I feel like I hear a lot, you know, on message boards and stuff like that. Like, I had to drive 8 hours to see Take Shelter, and I get that. But I wonder if that's like an actual issue. You know, for a large portion of the population.
I would imagine if you live in Kansas or Wyoming, it is.
Right, but that's not just because there are fewer independent theaters near you. There are probably fewer movie theaters in general near
you. Sure.
You know?
Sure. But then the ones that you do have you ever been to? I mean, the more remote you go, the one you do have shows Larry Crown for friggin' 3 weeks.
Right, but the biggest theater in my area is showing before midnight. You know what I mean?
I understand, except I think where you live is an anomalous place in a good way. It's a good anomaly.
I may agree with you that it's an anomaly, and I definitely agree with you that whatever it is, it's good.
Yeah.
But I don't agree with Lucas that fewer movies will be released. I just don't. If only because there are more ways to release them now. A lot of serious filmmakers, Steven Soderbergh, is releasing them on video on demand and the theater in the same day.
Yeah.
You know, like there is no sort of barrier to entry, to use a business school term. There's no barrier to entry purely from like number of screens, because you have infinite screens, because you have computers.
Right.
You know, and televisions and stuff like that. But even if you restrict it to theaters, Hollywood is always going to hedge its bets on the $250 million movies with smaller movies. They just will.
Because
Paranormal Activity 5 is going to make its money back. It just will.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Because it costs 50 cents in a bag of chips.
They only found that out because they made the first one and it made beyond its money back.
Yes. That's right. I think that's right. So I respect Spielberg and Lucas for varying portions of their filmographies and what they have done for cinema, but I think they're both basically wrong.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear other people's... I know I normally say this, but I normally don't mean it. I'd love to hear other people's opinions on this.
Yeah, seriously.
Normally when I'm done talking about something, I really don't care what other people think. I pretend I care what you think for the sake of the show, but but in this situation, like, everything I've said could just be way wrong, and I'd love to hear someone explain to me why they think the. Because what I don't understand when I look at what Spielberg says is, so let's say there's a half a dozen or so $250 million movie flops. Why does that necessitate the next thing that's going to happen is that there's going to be various levels of pricing?
Right.
Why would that be the answer? Why would the movie theater? Why would the theater? And I don't. He knows way better than I do. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to figure out why the movie theater owners would be okay with that.
Right. Right. That's fair.
So, anyways, that's it. Good question, though, Keith. It's a good. It's a very interesting idea.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting idea. I liked this mailbag. It was very unusual for us, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
In that the quantity, and in that the quality was good. I'm kidding.
Nice.
I'm kidding.
Nice. Well played. Keith, Tom, thank you for your questions. Second Breakfast Nation, yet again, man, for those who are just listening to us, find this point on the video because Phil is wearing a dashing fedora. Let me put it
come
that
on,
way.
Come on down with me to Fraggle Rock, Andy.
Oh, jeez. So, that brings us to the end of our mailbag and the end of another week of Second Breakfast. We hope you've had as much fun listening and watching as we have had doing it. And we'll see you next week. I'm Andy
yep.
Roth, and that's Phil Duvall. We're Second Breakfast. Bye.
Ciao. The most important meal of the day, Second Breakfast.